And joining us today is Paul Nursey, who is the president and CEO of Tourism Victoria. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Great to have me on, and thank you very much for the opportunity.
So we are today, John, we're John, Paul.
Mike and Paul.
And
Paul
Mike.
Squared. John, Paul Squared, and Mike.
There we go. We're already cracking the terrible. It's not even Monday morning today, John.
It's by Wednesday. When you get to my age, Paul, it takes several days for me to warm up.
Yeah.
Actually, it's Thursday.
Mm-hmm. Something like that.
Yeah.
All right. This is kind of cool because, of course, Victoria traditionally has been a massive tourist destination. When I grew up here, and you grew up here too, didn't you, John?
Yeah, I did mostly, and tourism has always been a massive industry.
Yeah.
And frankly, I think went through a period of time there when the economy was tough. It had its challenges. And we're lucky enough now to have, in my personal opinion, a brilliant man transforming tourism in this city. He's come on in a period of some of the best weather we've ever had. So way to go. But aside from the fact that tourism has significantly rebounded and becoming, assuming its natural place as a leading industry in the city, why don't we talk about actually who Paul Nursey is?
Let's
let him actually speak.
Yeah.
Great. Well, hey, thanks so much, John and Paul. I'll just give you the 30 seconds on myself. I didn't grow up in Victoria, but I didn't grow up far away. I grew up in Tawasin.
Oh, okay.
Right across the Strait of Georgia. But I have family here. I have two half-brothers and a half-sister who have lived here their whole lives. And my father spent a considerable amount of time living in Victoria. So I would come over on weekends. He was in the financial sector. He opened a bunch of National Bank financial offices all across the island in the 80s and 90s. We're in a building with National Bank Financial on the top.
You are, I know a broker up there.
There's lots of brokers that have reached out to me since I've landed here in Victoria.
I bet they have.
I think I'm a blue whale. But anyways, I think I see a little bit of my father's legacy when I come to work every day, which is really, really inspirational for me. But I grew up in Tawasin and had a very comfortable family. But I graduated right in the depths of the last kind of big structural recession in the early 90s.
Right.
And there was no work available, if you remember that time in British Columbia. And there was really only two areas that were growing at the time, and that was tourism, and that was the film industry.
Mm-hmm.
My wife is a lawyer, and she got work in the film industry, and I got work in the tourism industry. And that really shaped me. I was a highly educated young guy, but I never really got a real opportunity. But I'm so passionate where I landed, and worked up through small business, worked up through growing businesses like Rocky Mountaineer Rail Tour, which is now a multi-hundred-million-dollar company.
Yeah.
In the early formative days, and I was very involved in the operational and the sales and marketing side of that, and other small businesses like Mount Seymour in Vancouver. So, you know, I did my schooling. I have a bit of an economics background. I'm just, you know, working on an MBA right now, part time.
We're great. Through where?
University of Massachusetts.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Really, really good school. And but I've done the last about 17 years in destination marketing organizations.
I see.
Because I realize the power of common branding and common marketing if it's done well,
mm-hmm.
and the ability of it not to be effective if it's not done well. So I'm very passionate, and I bring that small business lens to organizations like this. So I've worked for Tourism Vancouver up through the bid of the Olympic Games. And then the Canadian Tourism Commission, our national organization, was moved up to Vancouver. It was a political decision driven by the Minister of Industry at the time, David Emerson. It was David Emerson, the Minister of Industry. Mm-hmm. So I moved into that organization in 2005. I worked my way up to the vice president role and assistant deputy minister equivalent federally, and was there from 2007 to 2014. And I competed successfully for this role and started in January.
Well, you and I've had interactions through some other boards, particularly Sport Host, and so I've come to know you, and we're very lucky to have you in this city. You referenced some recessionary times in the early 90s. Yeah, when I have a chance or someone allows me to speak to younger folk, I do reference that I've been through five recessions.
Yeah, exactly.
That one in 82, the one in the early 90s, certainly the that crash in 87,
mm-hmm.
And then the called Tech Crash in 01.
Yes.
And then the mother of all recessions in 08. And so it certainly changed the economy. This has been a recession unlike any other recession.
That's right.
And changed the economy fundamentally and likely has impacted our local economy and the tourism industry significantly. And we're starting to come out of that. But before we go into that and how your organization is dealing with that, tell us, Victoria folk, and Paul Squared of the Other Paul, we haven't really heard from you, but how do we fit little old Victoria in and amongst all the other little old Victorias? Mm. We keep hearing about how we're the third best, we're the fourth best, we're the best at this, we're the best at that. Man, my ego is just feeling great. From someone who actually has a perspective, a more North American and global perspective, where do we actually fit and can we even be better?
Sure. I'm going to attack that from two different angles. That's a great question. The really important thing to remember in terms of context is that tourism is the second largest employer in the world. It is the fourth largest contributor to GDP in the world. It is a massive industry globally. It is growing globally by about 6 or 7%, even through the recession.
You know, people just take it for granted.
Yeah, exactly. There
are people around and they're buying stuff and they have neat license plates.
Exactly. And it's fiercely competitive industry. I say we're in the business of OPM, other people's money. You know, if you want a quick and easy injection of foreign exchange into your economy, tourism is the way to go.
Right.
It's not cheap and it's not easy, but it's, you know, it's not extracting minerals from the earth. You know, it's a relatively sustainable, safe way to go. So where we fit in globally, I just want to preface.
So there's no tourism tailings hanging around.
Yeah, well, I would say our externalities are relatively green.
Excellent.
Yeah, but you know,
and sustainable.
Compared to other industries,
I didn't just go there, did you?
Oh, you did. Yeah.
And you know, I don't want to be dismissive of that, but compared to other industries, we have a relatively light footprint.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah.
But I think where do we fit? We're 6,000 hotel rooms. We're not a huge destination, but we punch way above our weight in terms of brand recognition. I think that's for a couple of reasons. Three reasons. First of all, we have a lot of brand equity because we've been in this business a long time. We've evolved. We need to continue to evolve. We need to reinvent ourselves. But we have a base of brand equity. So that's helpful. The second area that's so helpful is that tourism is a lifestyle play. You know, that's why I say tourism and the technology sectors are completely complementary to each other. It's all about lifestyle. And we are in an emerging, one of the coolest regions in the world. I call the Pacific Northwest of North America the new Mediterranean, you know, because there's certain lifestyle attributes which are making us a super region, right? You know, everything from Silicon Valley all the way up through Vancouver and into the oil sector and whatnot.
That's really cool to hear because both Paul and I actually have deep technology backgrounds.
Yeah, exactly.
And of course, tech has branded themselves as this really cool industry, you know, and it comprised of all this cool stuff.
It is.
And so I like the fact that it's synergizing with tourism. I thought the brand there is neat.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And if you think about it, you know, all the great lifestyle amenities that technology sectors need are, in fact, in many ways supported by both locals and tourists. So we wouldn't have all the cool restaurants. We wouldn't have all the different things if we didn't have it's a holistic ecosystem.
Right.
We're not taking credit for it. We're just a player. Right. And we love that there's technology companies here because they help bring more conferences, which help our business. So it's completely complementary. I think the other thing to consider, and I had lots of discussions with this with very senior federal ministers and whatnot, my last role. If you look at Gartner and you look at all the big tech companies, who is like some of the top suppliers to the digital advertising industry and some of the key players? It's tourism.
Yeah.
You know, if you think, you know, who's working in the e-commerce space? Who's the one.com that survived the .com crash? It's Priceline and the Priceline group of companies.
Right.
Their share price is over $1,000 right now. The tourism sector, the financial sector, a couple of unmentionable sectors and the gaming sectors are the drivers of the tech industry, right? So, so back to being complementary and mutually supportive. Where does Victoria sit? I call it the 2.5-hour ring of prosperity. We are in this region that is, you know, if you draw a circle around it, and I did as I was preparing for this opportunity, within 2.5 hours of flying radius of Greater Victoria, there is 70 million people. who will over-index in GDP per person and over-index in what I call outbound travel intensity. They travel more than the others. So we can fill those 6,000 people, 6,000 rooms, if we do our job well within that kind of Western North American piece. The other thing that's really good is we're plugged into Asia, right? So we talk about structural change in the last recession. You know, we're not going to be the gateway to Asia. You know, San Francisco, Seattle, and Vancouver are fighting for that. But Jeff Dixon at YYJ has done a great job of plugging in rapid and frequent connections to all those major hubs. So I'm really happy with where we're positioned. We're a great destination, but there are many, many other destinations. All those polls you talked about, I love that because that's the world of communications these days. You go to CNN or any lifestyle or MSN.com or anything, it's always top five this, top 10 this, top 30 of this. We're consistently getting ranked, and that's good buzz. Does it mean that we're the number three destination in the world? No, it doesn't. We still have deep, profound challenges that we need to work through. But I'll take that. It's better than not being on that list at all.
Yeah, better than being eighth.
Yeah. We're not
or
on
12th.
It.
Or 12th. Yeah, we're not on it. Yeah.
So I'm going to actually try to ask an intelligent question now, John, because, you know, I don't come from this world at all. But I do happen to run
But you know what? We're going to just arbitrarily rank ourselves third best at something.
Yeah.
Because it works. And I want to be on a list.
You got to have voters for that, guys.
Oh, come on, Paul.
John and I have 40,000 voters, you know? So there is some credibility there.
We'll sort of skim over that, okay?
Okay, perfect. So,
I have a profound interest in tourism, and the reason is, of course, I run a destination conference in Victoria every year that draws hundreds of people from outside of the region.
Right.
And so and part of the rationale for doing it here at all is we've got this beautiful city that people need to come and see, and in many cases – they already want to come and see,
right?
So when we put on social media camp every year, part of the rationale for somebody to fly here from San Francisco or from Calgary or from further afield is come and see Victoria because Victoria is awesome. And while you're there, come to a great conference, right?
But, or vice versa, right?
Yeah. But I can't imagine, and correct me if I'm wrong, I can't imagine that that's a huge component of the people who are coming, so, you know, to a conference, which in the grand scheme of the tourism sector is a drop in the bucket. So who is coming?
Yeah. Okay.
Cool. What's the demographic of the person that's coming to Victoria?
You know, I'll say it's diversified and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
But I want to touch on your comment about the conference, first of all. Some quick numbers. We're 7-1 leisure traveler versus conference traveler. So there's 7 leisure travelers for every conference traveler.
Okay.
But that does not mean the conference travel business is unimportant. Because what's important about the conference business, you know, while it be a social media camp or an association, you know, the association of poodle veterinarians, like there's all the associations for everything, right?
Yes.
Sports business or anything is, that it's predictable and it's business on the books.
Right.
So the hotel community can see it in out years and they can tie the renovation schedule to it. So it's critical for investment. So, but we do attract about 18% more delegates than other cities. And that is part of our sales pitch.
Oh, wow.
Because folks do want to come to Victoria. It is on their bucket list. So if they're on the fence as a member of any kind of association or group or considering a camp or a learning opportunity, you know, if it's in Kalamazoo or it's in Victoria, I might choose to go that year, you know, and it'll drive incremental business. So, you know, largely our breakdown of the mix geographically, because that's probably the easiest way to go at it, is quite reflective of Canada's business overall. It's about 80% domestic. Domestic is still the foundation.
Okay.
However, and when I mean domestic, I mean Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
That's important business, clearly, from a bread and butter perspective, but there's little opportunity for growth because there's only 35 million people here.
Yeah.
And they
and what are you going to get? 100%? Yeah. Well.
Yeah. And that's a risk if we get more domestic.
Yeah.
What I say often is what differentiates a get by year from a very profitable year is the incremental international visitors left because they stay longer and spend more.
Mm-hmm.
The international visitor is less independent. They need more help. They spend more and whatnot. So really what we have is a strong recovery from the United States. There's much higher passport ownership than there was 4 or 5 years ago. Whenever there's just geopolitical problems in the world, they pull their horns in and they travel more within the region.
Yeah.
So we get a little bit of a lift there.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think there's a lot of Americans traveling to Egypt to see the pyramids right now. And, I don't mean to be flip about it.
So true.
And the other area of growth really is Asia. Yeah. Some of our more traditional mature markets, Germany and the UK, really got hammered in 2008 and 2009. We're seeing a lift there, but again, there's deep demographic challenges in those countries. Mm-hmm. So I'm just kind of letting that mature business run its course. I'm not putting an incremental investment into it. I want to grow the business in the USA, and I want to grow the business in Asia, because that's how we're going to sustain ourselves and prepare for that next downturn.
Can tourists from China now come relatively unencumbered to Canada?
Yeah, in fact, that's a great story, and I think your listeners need to hear this because it's very, very important. In 2010, we signed something. I was involved in these negotiations, an approved destination status agreement.
Yeah.
So that allows Chinese travelers to visit in a much more unencumbered fashion. And we were one of the last Western countries to get that deal.
Yeah.
And but there's some good news to that. Australia and New Zealand got it back in 1999. But that's when Chinese travelers were just starting to travel. Mm-hmm. And you heard all these stories about kind of the low-yield, bus-touring Chinese traveler that didn't spend a lot of money. Now, in the 15 years between 1999 and 2014, their society has changed dramatically.
Of course.
75% of the Chinese travelers are now traveling independent. Their visas are not group. They're independent.
Oh, wow.
You wouldn't know that they're a Chinese traveler unless you saw their passport. They're educated. They're worldly. This is not their first rodeo. They've probably traveled 15 or 20 times there. And they are not only coming to visit, they're coming then to invest. So it helps drive foreign direct investment. So it is a highly independent, highly lucrative business. The distribution channels are maturing rapidly. So, you know, when we talk about a small little organization like ours, where we're going to spend our time and money and invest in people and expertise, we have to have deep Asian and Chinese in particular expertise to carve out our position within that incredibly important source market.
So we started this set of conversation and dialogue around lists and being on the top and how we fit. And you've alluded to some of the opportunities. Are there other sort of top 10 lists, top 5 lists, top set of opportunities that you would like to explore to complement already what is a strong base?
Yeah, it's a strong base, but we need to do more work.
Okay.
So we've now fully recovered from 2007 in absolute terms. But when you index that for inflation, we're not there yet. So all the entrepreneurs who have had to, you know, pay cost of living increases for 7 years, you know, cost of paper clips have gone up. I'm trying not to be too euphoric in the media because we have some real work to do. I'm really developing two complementary strategies. I want us to knock it out of the park in the off season, in the high season. We were having some very strong high season numbers the last 2 years, but our hotel rate is not strong yet. We haven't fully recovered in rate. And I don't think we need to worry about hotel rate. We need to compete there. And we should not be afraid of rate going up simply because that's what attracts investment. And today's customer is expecting a whole lot more than they did in the past.
Right.
You know, 15 years ago, the idea of a boutique hotel was novel.
Yeah.
Everyone expects those design touches.
Yeah. So doing more with less. That's
doing
the
more
mantra.
With less. Exactly.
Yeah.
And so our hotel room
or
rate.
Or getting more with less.
Yeah. Our hotel room rate at the very high end, you know, the best hotels at the rooms of the Magnolia, you know, the best rooms at the Loyal Point Inn, the Empress. We have a hard time breaking that $250 a night.
Right.
You know, you go to Seattle, it's $300 for a standard room. You go to Vancouver, it's the same. Not even to mention Seattle, San Francisco, pardon me, Sydney, Calgary. You know, it's $400 or $500 a night for a good hotel room. And that's because travel is booming. So we've missed an investment cycle. So the good news is we're starting to see investment again in our destination. Just recently, we want to protect the high season and really drive strong volume and demand so that we can grow. And then we're working very hard on an off-season strategy to kind of lessen those peaks. Through a series of work with conferences and events, Valentine's Day.
Yeah. And you know, I'm glad you mentioned the hotels because I've worked with a lot of them.
Yeah.
And my sense before I started running a conference was, you know, a hotel's just a place where you put your head at night, blah, 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 right? I've been to Vegas. I started thinking in those terms, right? My God, when Chris Brogan, who is one of the most influential people in the world, online especially, says about the Magnolia Hotel that it's the boutique hotel that all other boutique hotels want to be when they grow up. And this guy travels all over the world. We know we got some really kick-butt accommodations and world-class hotels in the city. Mm. And that's something I don't think the average Joe walking down the street realizes just how top notch these properties are.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah.
I agree with that. And just to build on that, we need to tell that story better. And we need to tell the story of tourism better. Because the one thing that I've noticed since I've been in Greater Victoria is that it's a major industry. I think everyone appreciates it, but it's also very much taken for granted.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, I hear stories about,
yeah,
you know, is the tourism sector a high paying sector? Well, the answer is yes, it is. You know,
that was on my list of questions,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe I'll just jump to that right now, but it's really interesting. And, the difference with our sector is that the entry level frontline jobs are the most visible and the highest profiled, highest paid jobs are invisible because they're in the back of the house.
Mm.
Right. So, and think of the tech sector where you see the players, you see the founders, you see the big personalities, everyone working, the folks cranking out code overnight halfway around the world in the Indian subcontinent, invisible. You think of the financial sector and you have, you know, all the players, you know, the semi-personalities in the financial world. But the kids who are in the warehouse in Mississauga processing the credit card applications for minimum wage are invisible. In the tourism sector, you know, those back-of-the-house jobs are actually front-of-the-house jobs. Mm. And they're often even good-paying jobs in and of themselves. But the hotel general manager, all the engineers that support the hotel, the salespeople, the marketers, the people who work in the digital space, the publicists, these are high, high-paying jobs. You don't see them. So it's a very interesting, we need to tell that story better. We were talking, everyone talks about economic impact and we have very big numbers. But the other piece about our business, and Statistics Canada has some very good research around this, it only takes $113,000 in gross revenue to create and protect a $65,000 a year job. So the money comes right from the customer into the local community very quickly without a lot of intermediaries. So from a community building and a small business building perspective, it's actually a very efficient industry.
I think there's something to be said about the, in terms of the mindset in Victoria around tourism for people who aren't in that sector, like you and I, John, that there's definitely, a legacy that's kind of a mixed legacy. 'Cause, you know, having grown up here, and knowing that Victoria was a tourist destination, what my mind originally goes through, and I'm going to show my age a little bit here, you know, Sealand, Fable Cottage, Miniature World, Undersea.
You are showing your age. I don't know what you're talking about.
Undersea Gardens, yeah. Which we don't, you know, and I think Miniature World might still be there, all of the rest of that is gone. And, you know, that was the age of the kitschy traveler that would come to Victoria for the Little Britain experience.
Yeah.
Da, 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 da.
Yeah, that's gone.
It's gone. Yeah. Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's totally gone. So the number one question, well, Miniature World is still vibrant.
Yeah.
And there's still a place for that for families.
And
right?
it's cool.
And
I
it's
love
cool.
It.
Yeah, I love it. I'm only 5'6", so I feel tall there. So I like Miniature World. But the number one question that we get at our 812 Wharf Street Visitor Center is what's cool and local and authentic that the locals love to do because I want to do that now.
Isn't that interesting?
So today's customer wants to experience. They want that behind-the-scene experience. They want their senses to be involved. They don't want to see. They want to do. They want to participate.
Really, the number one question.
Yeah, yeah, I bet you nobody asked that question in Vegas.
Yeah. No, exactly. That's it. But we talk about what we call experiential tourism.
Yeah.
And that's what we've grown to. Think of, you know, Portland. Portland is so hip now. We all want to go there. It's got this aspirational, experiential brand value.
Yeah.
It's for the donuts. It's for the food carts and that type of stuff. You want to experience it once.
Sure.
And that drives way more money out of, you know, back to other people's money. You know, that drives way more money out of someone's wallet and jeans and into the economy and straight into those small businesses, those family-owned businesses. So, you know, that's when I talk about tourism being a lifestyle play, being completely complementary with what's out there. There is still some of that old stuff because people got to get around and sometimes they get around in buses, right? They still want to see things to do and learn, but they're going to the Robert Bateman Gallery as opposed to some of those other things you mentioned. So, you know, transformation.
And what a brilliant place that is, that Robert Bateman Center. My wife and I got to tour it when they were building it after they got
it. It's worth, you know, revisiting with Paul Nursey perhaps next year, because there is this transformational brand going on from what you just described, Paul, to one of
someone coming traveler.
Here. Yeah, they want to hike, they want to bike, they want to have cool eating places, they want to have a nightlife, they want to do cool hip stuff.
Yeah.
And boy, you really got to know what that is,
right,
first of all.
Yeah.
And then you got to match it.
Well, and it's weird for me not being in the tourism sector because I live here. right? I mean, if I want to go, I live in Souk. If I want to go for a hike, or if I want to go down to the water, or if I want to, you know, go for a bike ride, like those are just things that I can do, right? And so, you know, where are these people coming from that they can't do this? And I guess if they're coming from the rest of Canada,
well, it's not that they can't do it where they're at; they just want to do it when they're here.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
So they want to continue their lifestyle. Okay,
fair enough. I want to ask you because it's something cool that my wife and I love. The cruise business.
Yeah.
And we came on a Disney cruise, and one of our destination ports was Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, you look at these cruise review sites, and Victoria is often ranked as one of the cool destinations. But it's not a cool destination on the British Columbia cruise, or the Canada cruise, or the Pacific Northwest cruise. It's on the Alaska cruise.
Yeah.
And, you know, hats off to whoever's branding Alaska. And it's not Sarah Palin, I suppose.
No.
But, you know, they have done just a stunning job to steal all the thunder. And, you know, maybe it doesn't matter because they're coming here anyway and they're loving us and everything else. But I wonder around the branding, if you had some insights around where Victoria fits in that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great question, because here's where I see we can leverage what we have when we have an opportunity in the future.
Yeah.
Right? On a couple of angles. Alaska is the final frontier for many Americans.
Yeah.
You know, there's 350 American customers, and about 20, 25 years ago, the cruise executives were very savvy and said, how can we run a very efficient and profitable run, you know, close to our home port and close to our customers? And Alaska was it, right?
Yeah.
You know, how can it counter the Caribbean? And from there, seasonality was brilliant. So Alaska is the destination. Both, and we're not a home port in Victoria. It's either Seattle or Vancouver, and we get the Seattle business. But Victoria is now an important component of that itinerary.
Yeah.
And it now stands on its own legs. And we're doing a lot of work with the Harbor Authority, the cruise lines, and others to what we call Jones Act proof this destination, because there's some legislative things that gave us a leg up, right?
Oh,
But now they want to, the cruise lines want to come here on our, for their own reasons.
Right.
Because there's so many great things to do ashore. The customers are demanding it.
Right.
They want the experience. From a destination's perspective, you know, I've often heard complaints they're only here for 5 or 6 hours and all that good stuff. Well, that's true. And these cruise lines have 7 or 10 day itineraries that are very complicated operationally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're big ships with thousands of people. So to try and change that big thing is probably barking up the wrong tree.
Yeah.
It's how do you leverage it?
Yeah.
I view it as a 500,000 person familiarization tour,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, we have 500,000 people coming here a year that we don't have to market to. They just come. And they're out. We talk about social media camp. They've all got 500 followers.
Yeah.
If they're having a great time, they're disrupting the space.
Yeah.
In terms of marketing communications.
Yeah.
So it's really about how do we make their experience the best one it can be while they're here. They spend on average $70, you know, $60 to $70 when they're here. And then more importantly, the work that we're working a bit more on is how do we invite those customers who just got a taste of it back, were surprised and delighted, and then want to come back for a second trip,
mm-hmm.
right? So
mm-hmm.
that's the real opportunity.
That's right, yeah.
And I don't think we've been doing a good enough job of that yet.
Wow.
And we're going to put a little bit more effort into that in the future.
Well, a cruise, face it, is a taste test travel experience.
Right.
And who isn't going to experience Victoria and say, wow, we really got to come back here as a destination? You know, it's funny you said with social media camp, because most of the people that are tweeting about how great Victoria is during social media camp, they don't have 500 followers. They've got, you know, 25,000 followers.
Yeah, yeah. I know.
So exactly. We really disrupt the space that
exactly.
week.
So I'm going to put out a disclaimer now. And it's very similar to the kind of disclaimer that one would find on a broadcast when somebody's talking about a TV show and the end of the TV show, and they say, this is what's going to happen. Okay.
It's a spoiler?
A spoiler alert.
Yeah. Okay.
So the next section here, and our final section with Paul, is going to be around governance.
Yeah.
And it's going to be around operational things and the kind of process stuff that actually makes and helps you get to some of these objectives. So if you don't like this stuff, here's the spoiler alert. See you next week. But why don't we start with your point that you brought up in our conversations before we went on air?
Yeah.
I think that's a good place to start.
Yeah, well, and and so I know Tourism Victoria has member companies.
Yes.
I know Tourism Victoria has a board.
Yes.
And I know Tourism Victoria has you.
Yes.
And And there's some legislation.
Yes.
And there's some taxes.
Yes.
I don't know how all of that fits together.
Yeah, it's a complicated model, and it's one that's been around 30 years, but it works.
Okay.
So
tell us. Enlighten us.
Yeah. So basically, the whole public policy and industry reason that organizations like us exist in the first place is that, you know, research will tell you, and the private sector will vote with their membership, because otherwise they wouldn't be members, is that it's easier for businesses to get into the marketplace, particularly further afield, under the idea of Victoria rather than on themselves, right? So, right. You know, the customer first chooses to go to a country, research right. will tell you, right. and then they choose to go to a city. Right. You know, domestically, provincial brands are very important. You know, you'll see those beautiful Newfoundland ads, but those mostly air within Canada.
Right.
You know, when you travel to Mexico, you don't know what state you went to. You either went to Mexico and you went to the resort or the town, right?
Yeah.
So in the customer's path to purchase decision, the customer thinks about the country first, in almost all cases, then the city, and then we have the businesses that, you know, want to compete there. So when we're competing for the hearts and minds of the customers, because you have to compete, having what's called a destination marketing organization makes a lot of sense. In fact, whenever they go away, Colorado famously shut theirs down. They went from the number one resort state to the number 17th within 2 years. Wow. So there's empirical, proven evidence, measured ROI on integrated marketing campaigns. And I'm bringing that in. But in terms of governance, we're enabled by two pieces of provincial legislation around additional hotel room tax. Because it's the hotel community that got together all those years ago and said, we will voluntarily charge an incremental hotel room tax if we can come together and market the destination.
So they decided that.
Yes, they drove that.
That wasn't the government came top down and said, we're going to impose this tax. Interesting.
No, they create the provincial framework.
Yeah.
It's up to every municipality to then voluntarily join the party. Oh. And we collect hotel room tax from Saanich and the City of Victoria.
Oh.
Although we represent the region because the customer sees no boundaries, right?
Right.
So,
that's a whole other talk.
Not for today. But the vast majority of hotels are in those jurisdictions.
I'm going to Canada, I'm going to British Columbia, and I'm going to Saanich.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, dude.
And then the other piece is that we then have member businesses who voluntarily join us, who get a series of member benefits, you know, listings on our websites, opportunity to participate. We do educational series, mixers, all those types of things. And they can participate in our marketing programs and sales programs and missions abroad and all that type of stuff. And they form the industry-led governance of the organization. So it's actually industry that governs us. We have a couple of ex officio seats from the City of Victoria and the District of Saanich because, you know, they have skin in the game, obviously.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it's a 16-person sector representative board of directors that provides governance to the organization to make sure that, you know, we're responsive to the needs of the industry as a whole.
Right. That's it.
And just real quick, since you've got here, what are some of the governance organizational pieces that you feel is going to help you and the region reach their goals within the tourism industry?
So the first thing I'm doing is I'm looking very closely at the organization internally. I mean, I think as a new leader, the first thing you can do is make sure that your own house is in order. And I'd say for the most part, it really was. But there's always room for improvement. Our marketing is exceptionally strong. We punch well above our weight in terms of our creative approach to marketing, and we measure the ROI. And we have people with much bigger budgets around the country who are jealous of our work simply because it's not as creative or differentiated. We all know how you need to do that. We're very strong in that area.
Right.
But internally, I've been very focused on, and this is where kind of geekdom and leadership comes into it, three key principles. I did a formal organizational review and I submitted that to the board of directors, but really there's three key principles that I'm working on right now. The first is this is a not-for-profit organization which is here to serve businesses, largely small businesses. I want to make sure we're the lowest overhead organization we possibly can be. I joke, but it's no joke, that when I joined the organization, there was 26 people and 37 rented plants. There are now 21 people and zero rented plants, right? So, you know, we are turning over every stone to make sure that as much money as possible is in sales and marketing and the least amount of money is in overhead. You know, within reason. We have to be compliant. Yeah. We have to,
Congratulations to you for that. That's a tough job.
Yeah, but, you know, it's necessary because we are in the sales and marketing business. The second piece is really around what we call linking strategy to operations. So we're rolling out the balanced scorecard framework within this organization to really make sure that, you know, I did this before, about 8 other destinations copied me around the world, especially in a return on objective type of a business where we don't have a cash register per se.
Yeah. That making sure,
because we're selling the idea of Victoria. We're not, you know.
Yeah. Well, your cash register is the tourism sector in Victoria.
Whole, right.
Yeah.
So it's a return on objective. So linking strategy to operations internally can be tricky, especially when you have many stakeholders pulling you in many different directions on a day-to-day basis. So we've just gone through a strategy rejuvenation process. We're rolling out balanced scorecard, and our staff are loving it because it's very simple and easy to read and understand, and for them
that's
to see
themselves. That's a whole show in of itself.
Yeah. And so I'm working on that right now. Okay. And then the third piece is really empowering staff. And we have great passionate staff because who wouldn't want to sell Victoria? But giving them the hard skills that they need. So I want to skill up in project management, marketing, communications, like those really hard skills, so they can be empowered and to do their job with confidence. So that's kind of what I'm working on now. And I've rebuilt the leadership team, my executive team of four, new CFO, new director of sales. My marketer, Trina Musso, was already fantastic. Mm-hmm. And now we're working with that one level down. So, you know, I say every day we get better, we get stronger. Change is, in fact, a process. But I'm 6 months in, and we are looking at this organization in a deep, deep way.
Well, this is fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us, Paul. I think Victoria is a better place for having folks like you coming in. And
And I get to say Paul squared.
Paul squared.
Yeah. I mean, that's the highlight.
And this is the first show that we haven't said founding father.
No, I realize
just,
that.
I just have. Yeah.
Well, I think this is the kind of interview and the kind of industry and the kind of personality that I hope we can touch base with you again.
Absolutely.
Maybe around Christmas, maybe around spring, and get an update on how things are going.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Paul.